Joining us this morning for a legislative update, 12th District Senator Brad Hawkins. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you. I know things are busy over there in Olympia. What's the schedule like at this point in the session?
Well, it's interesting because we just concluded the committee phase, which in a long session is the first quarter of the 105 days. And bills were scrambling to make it out of their committees by last Friday, and if they didn't, they were effectively dead for the session. Senate bills that were originated in the Senate anyway, and a couple of my bills did, but now the Senate is almost exclusively transitioning to Senate floor debates in the full Senate. And what we do is we go into the Capitol early. We have to start at 9 a.m. this morning, and we go all day, and on some of these days we will go into the evening. Some of the evenings will go very late, and we will consider the bills that have been elevated and advanced out of their committees. And of course, that involves sometimes preparing floor amendments and trying to brief those bills and understand them. So we spend half of our time in caucus reviewing all the bills and discussing all the amendments and proposing new amendments, and then we go out and debate those bills and vote on them. And it's a little bit challenging, too, because I've been tied up in my committees for several weeks, and I feel like I have a pretty good understanding of the transportation bills, the higher ed bills, and the education bills because I serve on those committees, and I'm more familiar with those bills. But when you transition into this new process, this next phase, you're considering bills from all the committees, whether it's health care, natural resources, agriculture, law and justice. So you really kind of have to be prepared to, to do the work, to study the bills, discuss the bills, and then ultimately vote on them.
And let me ask you, how much do you have to rely on, some of your fellow senators that are serving on those committees to maybe help bring you up to speed in a meaningful way?
Oh, you rely heavily on them. And that's why, the whole system is kind of built on trust. But we are trying to review the bills in that caucus process. So, and then we also have additional staff that assist us both within the caucuses as well as the nonpartisan staff members. But it is a scramble. My goal is to try to read through all the bills, at least scan them over and understand the ones that I'm voting on. But I can't say that that's achievable all the time, especially with the high volume. So you're really kind of scanning these bills. You're analyzing the votes that were made in committees. You have these briefing documents that give you background on each of the bills too. And then also you have the constituent feedback. Constituents have written on certain bills and they have certain perspectives. So you kind of try your best to take all that into account before the bill is before you. And then what makes it challenging is you feel like you have a good understanding of a particular bill, but then there are amendments proposed. And some amendments are just line amendments where you strike this line and replace it with this other line. Other amendments are what they call striking amendments, which they propose to replace the whole bill with something else. And it has to fit the title and the scope of the bill, but the amendments can take the bill in a totally different direction. Even one word can do that. We talked last week about that inclusive curriculum bill that would mandate this inclusive curriculum on all school districts. Well, one of my amendments, it's more substantive than just this, but in a lot of areas, I'm proposing to change just one word from shall to may. So it would allow the school districts that they may adopt these things, but the word shall, which is currently in the bill, forces the school districts to adopt those things. So some of the amendments are just small, like one word, and they do have an impact. Other amendments are paragraphs or pages, and those obviously have an impact as well.
Definitely a major distinction in the words shall and may. Definitely.
No doubt.
Yeah.
No doubt. When you're talking about putting things into law, that definitely has a distinction. And words matter in this business. When ultimately the courts and the legal system and everything will interpret what we do based on the words that are in statute, you know, the words matter.
Indeed. 7:49 now at KOZI. If you're just joining us, we're making a community connection with State Senator Brad Hawkins. Senator, tell us, there's some new legislation underway perhaps for drug possession. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so this is a big issue, and it's been something that the legislature has been wrestling with for a couple years. But back in 2021, you may recall that the state Supreme Court issued a major decision on drug possession known as the Blake decision, and it essentially struck down our state's felony drug possession law. And so at that time, I think that occurred even during the legislative session, the legislature was sort of in a pickle, and we had to come up with some sort of fix that would hold constitutional muster against our state Supreme Court. And the whole decision had to do with a woman who had drugs in her possession, but she said she was borrowing the jeans from a friend and they weren't her drugs. She didn't knowingly possess them. And so it really got the legislature into trying to figure out what's the best thing to do here. And so during that time, we made a short-term fix to the law, and we passed a law to basically have, and it was a compromise at the time, drug possession to be a misdemeanor. But that law sunsets this July, July 2023. So now the legislature's big question is, what law do we replace it with? Do we continue with the current law? But the reality is, the legalization of drugs, or the effective legalization of drugs, has led to a lot of problems in our state. And so I think legislators realize we need to come up with a more substantive fix to this. And I guess the real question, and I could share more with you, but the real question is, should a person go to jail, or that should they be allowed to get treatment? And then if they don't get their, if they choose the treatment option and they complete it, should they have any convictions vacated because they're successfully completing their program?
A lot to consider there.
Yeah, it is. It is. There's a lot to consider. And I know a lot of my colleagues have said that drug possession and drug use is a personal health care issue, and I don't necessarily disagree. However, many drug users sadly not only threaten themselves, but they also can impact society. That could lead to more crime, and we've seen more crime in our state, traffic safety issues. Their drug possession or drug use can affect innocent children, families, communities, and ultimately, it could lead to more crime because people are very motivated to get money to support their drug habits. So it is a big issue. Ultimately, what we do want for everybody is to be able to get the treatment that they need so they can get better. And sometimes that involves also this, it will involve the state providing more services so that they can get the treatment successfully and get better.
Senator, let me ask you, now working in a new district, how has that been going so far? And have you been hearing from some of your new constituents?
I haven't been hearing from the new constituents, and surprisingly, it's going very well. I know after the redistricting process, and we ended up with a portion of North Bend and a portion of Monroe and the Highway 2 communities, it's we kind of like thought, oh no, we need to get to know all these communities all over again, and you have to rebuild trust and credibility with an entire new region of the state. But it has gone really well. I've enjoyed them. But right now, they're all visiting me, so it's kind of easier. What the challenge is with our large district and the geographical boundaries of the Cascade Mountain Range is that we're not as accessible to them all the other months of the year because there's a lot of travel involved, and you can't just hop over to Monroe or North Bend for a luncheon. It's just not as easy to do that. So we're doing a lot of, I anticipate we'll do a lot of meetings by Zoom and things. But I do think having that portion of the state, too, could moderate our district's positions a little bit more. I did notice I sent out a survey about whether we should consider lowering the school, the approval for school construction bonds. And it's not something I've supported, but I wanted to get people's feedback. And I think it was a district-wide survey, and I think the results showed that, you know, the Western Washington portion of the legislative district may have some different opinions than the eastern portion of the district.
Mm-hmm, no doubt. Let me ask, I believe this is currently in the House, consideration for a bill that would help bridge what is being called the digital divide, where people who would perhaps purchase a phone of $250 or more, that would be able to access the internet, they would pay a fee of some $2, with the state collecting an estimated $100 million by the year 2030. What's your take on this? Where do we draw the line on these, quote, divides?
Well, I recently have learned of this bill, and so I looked it up. It's House Bill 1793. It would add that $2 tax to a phone over $250, which I think is most phones. It's sponsored by a representative I know, known as Mia Gregerson. And Mia has supported other bills that are technology related in the past that would, I think they would require all students to have certain computers and that we would provide broadband connections to people's homes. So I think her connection to digital issues is, a passion of hers. But the reality is I don't think it's fair to attack something that is so important to people. I mean, I can support 911 taxes and some of these other things because obviously with everybody having a cell phone, we need to make sure the 911 service is compatible with people's mobile devices.
Sure.
But the idea of taxing people $2 on their phones basically so that other people can have phones or some of these other things, obviously, I have some issues with that. And that's one of the philosophical differences here in Olympia is that some of my colleagues want to continue to tax people who they believe can, quote unquote, afford it to pay for people who they say can't afford it. But the people who can't afford it, I believe, could make better decisions and prioritize some of their spending better. But also the people who, quote unquote, can afford it, at some point, there's a tipping point because you can't easily afford those things because you're getting taxed so much. And we're seeing that with property taxes, mm-hmm. too. People think, oh, we'll just run another property tax. But at some point, and I sadly hear about it because it is property tax season with statements going out, there are many seniors who are being essentially squeezed out of their homes due to property taxes. And these are homes that they've lived in and for years and have worked hard to pay off. And now that their houses are paid off, their property taxes come separately. Mm-hmm. And they have to write a separate check. And it's very expensive, $6,000, $10,000 a year or more. And seniors, especially on a fixed income, can't afford it. So at some point, the layering of taxation, whether it's property taxes or this sort of thing with technology devices, the layering of taxation will eventually catch up, and it will have impacts.
All right. Totally off topic, but getting quite a bit of press today. In Oregon, we've got several counties in the eastern half of the state that are looking to make a move. They want to be part of Idaho. It's getting traction over there. What are your thoughts of something like that happening here in Washington State?
Well, that's interesting. I've heard of what's happening down in Oregon. I think I saw some national news story on it, and it is kind of interesting. There has been an effort in the past in Washington to separate eastern Washington and call it the State of Liberty. And I think something like that would need to obviously be really carefully thought out, because while I know that people would enjoy being separated out philosophically from Western Washington, and sort of enjoy having sort of shared a shared state of that's more aligned with people's philosophical interests, I do think financially something like that could be really challenging for our state. So the way it works is we do benefit. We do have a lot of infrastructure needs in central and eastern Washington, and we do get a lot of tax benefit from western Washington. So, you know, if we don't want to be a part of western Washington, for example, in our state, we would need to make sure we could support the services, whether it's dealing with wildfires and the road infrastructure, and what would we do for a higher education system? I guess WSU would be our number one university, but if we were a separate state, you know, what would our higher education institutions be? So I think there are a lot of challenges that would need to be considered, and maybe they are considering those things in Oregon.
Yeah.
But I could certainly understand, after dealing with all these Seattle-based policies that get forced down our throat here in the state, I can understand why people are interested.
Yeah, indeed. Well, always an interesting conversation, Senator. We appreciate you taking the time out of this busy time of the season for you to get us up to speed from Olympia. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Jeff. Always great to connect with you, and we'll chat next week.
Sounds great. Be well. Again, State Senator Brad Hawkins joining us this morning for a legislative update from Olympia.